Welcome to the Sons of Technology Clubhouse. Ditch your fear at the door, take a risk, and enjoy the ride with your hosts, Joe Marquez and Kyle Anderson.
Welcome, everybody, to another fantastic episode of the podcast by the Sons of Technology. And I want to address the elephant in the room. I know we haven't dropped an episode in like 2 months, okay? But you all understand, right? I mean, it's the holiday season, right? November is going into Thanksgiving and break, and then December's going into, whatever holiday you celebrate in December and the New Year's. I mean, and then so it's just a lot. And then to find time to do a podcast, it ends up feeling like work. And Kyle and I have always felt that this podcast needs to bring us joy in order for us to be joyous for our listeners. And if we're doing it just to push out an episode, it doesn't feel genuine. And so we took a little bit of time off. And we said we will do an episode when there is something absolutely worth talking about. And I think we have something for you today that is absolutely worth talking about because it's being talked about everywhere. And that is generative AI. And we'll talk about a little bit more what that means and the different applications and how it can be used. But we wanted to start off by just saying we understand. Some of you have been saying, have we missed it? Have you dropped an episode? I didn't see it. No, we have been on hiatus for a couple of months, but we're back. We're back. If this is your 87th episode with us or your first episode with us, we appreciate you. We appreciate all you do for education, and we appreciate you listening and watching in whatever modality best suits you. So before we begin, let's go ahead and introduce ourselves. My name is Joe Marquez, Director of Academic Innovation for Q. I'm an educator out of the Central Valley of California. And as always, my partner in innovation, Kyle Anderson. Kyle, please introduce yourself.
Good day to you, Joe. Good day to listeners. I'm going to explain a little bit more about our hiatus too here in a moment. But yes, I am Kyle Anderson. I am a special education facilitator based out of Las Vegas, Nevada. You can find me on Twitter that I have not been on much at all, at Anderson EdTech. I honestly can't tell you the last time I tweeted as of this recording because I just have not been feeling the Twitter, haven't been feeling social media much at all. I'm also on Instagram, haven't posted there at all, but you can still connect with me there. I looked my blog, AndersonEdTech.net. I have not written a post since last April, so haven't been doing much there, but there's still a lot of great content there. I do have a book called To the Edge, Success and Failures Through Risk-Taking that is available on Amazon, BarnesandNoble.com, and through my publisher, EduMatch Publishing. I even went as far over New Year's and into the first 10, 12 days of New Year's. I shut my Facebook down. So I completely detoxed off social media for almost 2 weeks going into the New Year's. And I tell you what, it was great. And really the only reason I got back on it was because my wife's 40th birthday is coming up and we are doing a party for her at the beginning of March. So I had to put together a Facebook event to start planning out what we're going to do for her birthday. So otherwise I would just shut my Facebook right back down again. So, but just to kind of address that elephant in the room a little bit more. Yeah, we did take some time off and yeah, the holidays had a lot to do with it, but frankly, you know, you hit the nail on the head, Joe, when you said that if something's not bringing us joy and that this feels like work, then we're not just going to push one out just to push one out. And there were two different occasions where we had the recording set up days in advance and said, this is what we're going to do. The first time we get on and I tell you, I'm like, dude, I'm just not feeling it today. And you're like, oh, like, well, it doesn't have to be a long one. I'm like, no, I'm not feeling this at all. Like, I'm not sure if I can contribute today. So we're like, well, let's just put it off. So we put it off for a couple of weeks. And then you came back with pretty much the same thing and said, man, I got so much going on right now. I'm just not feeling it. And it's like, you know what? Then fine. We're good. Let's just do one when we could do one. And, you know, and even this week, like, it was like radio silence from both of us. And then we just both kind of talked a couple of days ago and said like, hey, you want to do this? Like, yeah, let's do this because we got something really good. And well, let me rephrase. You got something really good, Joe. you came at me with this and it was crickets coming from me because I'm like, I know nothing about this. So you're basically going to be schooling listeners and me today. So I'm actually really excited because I haven't had something where I know nothing about it in a really long time. And this will be a good learning opportunity.
Yeah, and I'm excited about this. It's no secret that I talk to yourself and some fellow EdTech Army members. You know, I talked to Roland, our buddy from Canada, our brother from the other border. I talked to my buddy Chris all the way in Wyoming. We talk to Tyler up in Idaho. Educators all over the place. And one of the things I was saying to them was, you know, it's been a long time since I've gotten excited about something coming out in EdTech, right? I mean, you remember back in the glory days, 2013, 2014, 2015, it seemed like there was a new EdTech tool being dropped every month, right? You'd have Pear Deck and Nearpod and Flipgrid and GoFormative and all these different tools kept dropping. And it's like, oh, how can we use these in the classroom? And, you know, how can I use this to amplify my students' voices and really get in the minds of my students and really utilize this in my classroom? But I'll tell you, for a good while, there's been nothing that has stood out to me. Nothing new that is like, wow, this is amazing. And when I came across that, I don't want to say when I came across this, okay? When I saw this, when I saw what was happening in this generative AI realm and the ramifications it can have in the K-12 and university classrooms for good and for bad, I'm like, we have to jump on this because this is a true disruption to the norm, right? This is as disruptive to information as the internet was. Taking all of humanity and putting it at the fingertips of everybody, that was a game changer, right? This is the same thing. We are at the beginning of something that can truly change what it means to have original content. So let me tell you a little bit about what generative AI is. And there's a couple players in this game, but one of the big players is a nonprofit called OpenAI. And what they do is a couple different things. There's a tool out there called DALL-E, DALL-E, which creates images, brand new images never existing before, based on your textual input. Based on what you say in text, it'll generate an image from that. And then the ChatGPT is a conversational text generator based on a prompt that you have. And this came out at the end of November. And it is just going by wildfire. You have some schools that are going, oh, how can our teachers use this? And some schools say, we don't want this in our district or county at all. I mean, I think the most famous school district that banned it is New York City Public Schools. They banned it completely. I think they've opened it up for some educators, but of course it's been banned for the students and other people. But here's the thing, kids can get it at home, right? It's almost like putting a Band-Aid on a dam. If you're just trying to block it from the school, that just makes it more appealing to the students. Oh, it's being banned, so we better go check it out at home, right? So let me tell you what this does. I'm going to start with ChatGPT, because this is the one that recently came out November 30th of 2022, and is just causing a stir. First off, Microsoft early on put $1 billion into this nonprofit. And of course, this nonprofit now has a for-profit wing, of course, and they lease out their tool to anybody who's willing to pay. And I'll talk about it later and show this later, but Canva has adopted both DALL-E and ChatGPT into their platform. So Canva, which is used in a lot of schools, now has this generative AI built into it. And just recent reports have stated that Microsoft is ready to invest another $10 billion into this. And it said they want to utilize this in their Bing browser to overtake Google. Okay. So let me tell you what this does. This is what ChatGPT does. It has taken almost the entirety of text from the internet. And through its neural network, it has decided how humans dictate and communicate and write in various ways for various reasons, whether it's a conversational reason, a educational reason, a professional reason. It has determined the best way to write sentences and paragraphs based upon how you want it to write. And it generates it as a brand new original piece of work. So what this means, Google's originality detector, which detects plagiarism, will not work on this because it's brand new. Turnitin.com will not work on this because it's brand new. So it's not plagiarism, but it's not the student's or individual's original work. It is a computer generated piece of work, and it does an amazing job. So let me show you a couple things, Kyle. But first, before I show this, what are your thoughts on this? Because it can generate anything at a moment's notice, brand new, and it's, there are limits, of course, right? It says on this, on the thing, limitations may occasionally generate incorrect information. That's a big caveat. But based on all this, what are your thoughts on this?
So before I give any thoughts on it, I want to preface with this. When you first proposed this to me as something we talk about today, I told you and already mentioned that I didn't know anything about it. At the same time, I also was under the impression that you were referring to these apps that come out every now and then that people, they spread like wildfire on more of the social medias like Facebook and Instagram. For example, drawn a blank on the name of it right now, but the one that over like the course of like December and into early January, people were going in and uploading a photo of themselves. And then it was creating all of these like cartoon avatars. Like, you know, if I took a picture of myself, then it would create like a bunch of different images of me, like as a Viking, me as like a spaceman, me as like a wizard, like all these different things. And for me, A, I'm just not interested in that to begin with. B, different technology companies, i.e. social media companies, already have enough of my personal information and track me. I don't need them to then take photos of me and continue to do more with that. And to me, I'm not like super paranoid about like my personal information in that regard, but like, I just, to me, there comes a limit. And one of the reasons why I've never gotten on TikTok is because frankly, I am partly paranoid that a company that the Chinese government has their fingers in very deep with potentially, I don't need that out there either. So, but I digress. And people can correct me if I'm wrong about like behind the personal information with TikTok and whatever, that's fine. But I also don't spend a lot of time watching videos and don't need to fall down the rabbit hole of wasting 2 hours of my life every day just watching stupid stuff on TikTok either. So that was my initial impression of this. While you were explaining all this, I went onto the website and found the program here. Had to sign up for it. So I just, and you can sign up using your Google account. So I signed up for it real fast. It did ask for a phone number to send me a code in order to confirm that it was actually me. Did that real fast. And then it opened up and it did exactly like you said. So you can type something in. The caveats are that, again, it could misleading or incorrect information, you know, but please provide us feedback if this happens. So there's a very robust way to do this. So I went in again, as you were talking, and I just typed in how to shoot a slap shot just to see what would happen. So, and it came out and over it, and I was actually surprised that it actually made it look like it was somebody typing it out after I put that in. It wasn't just something like where the wheel spun for a second and then it spit out a paragraph or a page or something like that. It actually looked like it was typing it in after I asked the question. And
not just typing it in, thinking about correct. What it wanted to say next, because that's key.
Correct.
That's so what it exactly. So is doing.
Exactly. So it was, it typed in the first little bit and then it paused for a second, typed a little bit more, paused for a second. So over the course of about 15, 20 seconds, this is the response I got on how to shoot a slap shot. And I'm going to read it verbatim. To shoot a slap shot in hockey, start by positioning the puck just behind your back foot and pointing your toes towards the net. Next, bring your stick back behind your body, keeping your arms and hands close to your body. As you bring your stick forward, transfer your weight from the back foot to your front foot and follow through with your shot, pointing the blade of your stick at the target. It is also important to keep your eyes on the target and aim for the upper corners of the net. Practice is key to master a slap shot. That sounds exactly like something that I've actually looked up before. So I've struggled for as long as I played hockey and shooting a good slap shot. So I have looked for pointers before. And this is pretty good compared to some of the stuff I've seen on websites before. So I'm very impressed with what this came up with. So now that is me learning a little bit more about how to shoot a slap shot. Now, for those that are watching this on YouTube, you're going to demonstrate how this is going to work. And for those that are just listening as the podcast, we can explain these things. So Joe, I'm going to turn it back over to you so we can do this.
Yeah. So if you're watching this live with us or asynchronously later on YouTube, or even listening to us on your favorite podcasting platform, I'm going to explain exactly what we're doing. I'm on the main page of ChatGPT, and there's a button that says start a new chat. And so at the very bottom, you start a new chat. And basically it means put in a prompt. What do you want to know? And so I want to show you what teachers are using this for in the classroom. Okay. I never had experienced this, but there are some educators that are told on Friday, we need a lesson plan for what you're going to be teaching next week. Right. On Friday, you're going to be receiving this lesson plan on what you're going to be doing next week. So this will build that for you. So watch this. Here's the question. Or here's the prompt. Build me a lesson plan for eighth grade students learning about the structure of matter using the next generation science standards. Those are all the things that I am asking this machine to do for me. Build me an entire lesson plan for me teaching this to my students next week. But I also want to make sure that it's incorporating what next generation science standards are being hit, right? And so all I'm going to do is hit next or input. And now watch this. Here's a sample lesson plan for eighth grade students learning about the structure of matter using the next generation science standards. Lesson title, Understanding the Structure of Matter. Objective, students will be able to describe the structure of atoms and explain the properties of matter in terms and behaviors of the molecules. Here's the materials that you are going to need. Textbook, periodic table, models of atoms, whiteboards and markers. And then it gives the procedure of a brand new lesson that it thinks would be best to teach this model right here. And it says, discuss all these things. Here's the procedure. Step one, step two, step three, step four, step five, step six, step seven. Close the lesson by reviewing key concepts and having students complete a worksheet. Not a worksheet. We don't do worksheets. So that, see, these are things that you as the teacher be like, I'm going to use a quizzes on this one. I'm going to do this, right? Student presentation on the elements. Here's some assessments, lab activities, and all these things. I can even say, please list the standards being met, right? So I'm following up, okay? And it says that this lesson plan aligns with the following next generation science standards. 8.PS1.1, developing models and describe. It gives it to you, all of it. It does this for you, right? And maybe you don't like that lesson. You can say to it, we've already done that lesson. Can you recommend another one? And it'll give you another one. Brand new. Generated just for you. It's nuts.
And the key too is at one point it says, this is a sample of what you could do. Modify as you see fit. Yeah. It specifically typed that out for you.
And also that's for like you're an administrator. Like you can have on there saying, this is what I plan on doing, but I will be modifying to meet the needs of my students, right? A caveat. But again, here's the thing. It's brand new. This is not something that was generated from, like, it didn't search the internet, find an existing lesson plan, and then just paste it in. It's building it from multiple sources by tokenizing your words, identifying where those are located throughout the billions and billions of sample texts that it's going from, and building what it thinks an eighth grade science teacher would write out for a lesson plan for their students or their administrators. It's doing all of this for you in real time, right? That's a benefit. But now I want you to say this to you, Kyle. Let's say that you're a history teacher. Okay, you're a history teacher and you tell your students, okay, and you've taught social studies, you've taught history before, right, Kyle?
I taught social studies for 11 years and then I co-taught it for a couple of years as a special ed teacher.
So yes. Tell me a topic or tell me something in history that you've taught your students before.
Let's go with the causes of World War One.
Okay, so let's do not only the causes of World War One, add on something else to make it seem like the students are adding in their own opinion about it. So what are the causes of World War One, and add something onto that.
And how that led to the outbreak of World War Two.
And what led to the causes? Led to the what? The start?
To the outbreak of World War II.
Now watch this. This is the prompt, but now I'm gonna say, write me a 5 essay an eighth grader would turn in on the following prompt. Right, here we go. Let's see. World War One, also known as the Great War, was a global conflict that lasted from 1914 to 1918. There were several causes that led to the outbreak of this war, including imperialism, nationalism, and alliances. It's writing this for you. And I specifically said a 5-paragraph essay. If you, the teacher, said I needed to be a 10-paragraph essay, it would write a 10-paragraph essay meeting all of those steps. Okay? Now, it's writing right now. If you're watching right now, it's writing it brand new. This cannot be caught by a plagiarism detector because it's original. Not original by the student, but original by the AI. It can't be caught by Turnitin.com. It can't be caught by Google's originality detector. And I want you to think of this. If a student forgot to do this and they either needed to spend 8 hours researching and writing or 8 hours playing Fortnite, knowing they can just type this in, what do you think they are going to do? Right? This is one of the reasons that teachers are alarmed by this. How are the teachers going to identify original student work versus AI generated work if it can't be caught by a plagiarism detector? These are things our students will be doing if we are not talking about it with them in class, if we are not talking about the ethical reasons why we shouldn't be doing this, right? Now, maybe you can tell the students this. Why don't you ask the AI to give you a starting paragraph to this so that it gets your juices flowing, so you kind of get an idea of where you want to start? Instead of having it write the whole paper, why can't we have the AI give us a push, give us a head start in this? This is the way it can be utilized. It can help students unravel writer's block, right? It can help students who don't quite understand the material kind of get a head start into it. These are the things how it can help us. But if we don't talk about it with our students in the classroom, we are going to be given auto-generated AI papers and we won't know about it. We have to talk about the ethical consequences of this, right? But there's things that can do. There's things that will benefit us. But to an average teacher, it could be scary because now we're just going to have students typing in and getting these things to us, right?
Now, what I will say about this paragraph, I was reading it as you were explaining what was going on and it was writing it. And this is a very good 5-paragraph essay. Okay, there are no misspellings of any words. There's no grammar errors. Everything in here has been done very well by the AI. Now, this would be the way you've mentioned Turnitin.com. You've mentioned plagiarism checkers, how it's not going to catch those kinds of things. But as teachers, we know our students and we know their strengths and areas for improvement in regards to things like writing. If I'm reading this from a student that I know never uses commas or other punctuation or capitalization, I'm going to know right away that this is most likely not their work. So that's the one aspect, the one layer to this, where teachers are going to be concerned about whether they're doing their own work. But just by knowing your students, you're going to be able to read something like this most of the time, I believe, and say, okay, I don't believe this is your work. Okay, so tell me a little bit more about this writing, and don't use it as a way to punish a student. Like, no, you cheated. You're getting a zero on this assignment or something like that. Again, using it as a lesson as to the ethical aspects of using something like this to complete work. So, and I love your idea about using it as a starting point. So one thing I used to tell kids in classes when they were doing research for projects was you can't use Wikipedia for a source for your for your research. Can you use Wikipedia as a starting point? So I used to tell the kids, yeah, go to Wikipedia, look up what you're looking at. And then once you start reading some of that stuff, then you can build off your research by looking into stuff that's in that Wikipedia article, because there should be stuff out there that can back that up. But you are going to write a little bit extra now on this. So,
well, there's one thing I wanted to add into this, though. I mean, that's a valid point of if a student hasn't written this well previously, to be able to bring it up. But can you really call a kid up and say, this is written too well, I don't think you did it, right? What if a student who always writes well does this? Are we going to call that person up and say, I don't think this is yours? Well, now you started talking about equity in the classroom. Who are you calling up to determine this isn't your work? It's too good to be your work. I don't think that would go well. You know, you're saying that to some students and not others, right? I do have to say this. There is, and I'll bring this up really quick. There is a tool that was just created by a graduate from Princeton called GPT-0. And what it does is it reverse engineers GPT on how it creates text. It kind of takes apart text to tell you if it believes a GPT program wrote it. And so this is almost like a plagiarism detector for GPT. It's called GPT-0. It's free right now, but you can bring in the text that a student brought in, and it will tell you, based on the data points I have collected, this is a human written work, or this is an AI written work. So there are things coming out. So teachers don't need to be completely on edge at the moment, because, well, you know, companies are going to be integrating things like this into their originality reports. It's going to be GPT detectors, right? So it is coming down the pipe. So we don't have to worry about that. But we still have to be able to tell kids, it's not okay to have it write everything for you. It's a good way to get information. It's a good way to get started. We can still use it. There's still good that can be utilized in the classroom with this. It's just, we don't want you to just be, you know, I don't want to say the word lazy, but we just don't want you to use it for not having to do your work. I mean, it has to be talked about in class. It's part of digital citizenship. It's a part about being a good student, but this is not going away. This is already incorporated into lots of different tools. And if you look up GPT startups, you will see, you know, tens to hundreds of new startups that are utilizing GPT-3 technology as the basis for their business. This is not just an education problem or an education opportunity. This is a free market business opportunity that's happening as well. Right. But it also can do some fun things. I did this with my daughters over break. We created stories on characters that should never meet each other. So I'm going to write this. Write me a story where Fozzie Bear discovers Chewbacca is his father. Okay. And I don't know if I spelled Chewbacca right. Sorry, all of our Star Wars fans. There we go, Chewbacca right there. And I'm sure I spelled Fozzie. Yeah, I spelled Fozzie, right? So let's see. Sometimes it lets us do this. Sometimes it doesn't. Sometimes it says, sorry, we're not allowed to write about fictional characters that are proprietary. But let's see if it works. Oh, there it is. It works. So once upon a time in a galaxy far, far away, there was a young bear named Fozzie. Fozzie was curious and adventurous bear who loved to explore the galaxy and meet new creatures. He'd always been fascinated by the stories of the legendary Wookiee Chewbacca and dreamed of one day meeting him. One day, Fozzie decided to set out on a journey to find Chewbacca. He packed his bags and set off on his spacecraft, determined to find the... It writes the whole story for you, right? About how Fozzie Bear finally meets Chewbacca, and they realize they're father and son, right? And then the cool thing about this is you can say, now write me a sequel, and it will write you a sequel to this. It'll continuously go.
This is hilarious. I'm reading this as it's writing it. This is absolutely hilarious. And now I want like a Muppet Babies Star Wars mashup or something like that. This is great.
This is fun, right? Because now imagine this. As parents, we can make up stories and have these individual stories for our kids, right? That are original all the way through. But now I want you to imagine this. Imagine children's book companies. Now they don't have to hire authors. They write me a story where a ladybug, a grasshopper, and a dung beetle become unlikely friends in the face of adversity, right? And then it writes it. And all you need to do is get images. You have a new book, right? The dung club or something. I don't know. But now, that's the thing I wanted to bring up about this technology. Is it now putting writers in the hot seat of no longer being needed to produce new works? That's the thing I want people to start thinking about now. Publishing companies have zero reason to have authors if this can work. Zero reason. They can create original stories from this without having to pay an author, a human, for being creative. Think about that for a second, right?
At the same time, though, while not writing per se, I think you still need that human to be able to come up with the ideas to get this going. Because right now, you have the story here about Fozzie finding out Chewbacca's his father. Okay, this is just a quick 5-paragraph story. If you're talking about a book that would be several hundred pages long, it's not necessarily going to write the whole thing.
Well, no, I'm talking about a children's picture book.
Correct.
That is 25 pages long, and each page has a sentence.
Correct.
Right?
That I could see. Okay, and then I'm sure I don't know much beyond this because I'm just learning about this, but I'm pretty sure there are programs out there where you can tell it to draw you something.
That's what we're going to do next. We're going to do that next.
And this part I do know a little bit about because last week tonight with John Oliver, he's been sharing in the previous episode, sharing some artwork that people have been creating using the AI where it's like, show John Oliver sitting on a unicorn eating a sandwich and then it spits something out. So, yep. So, you know, building off of this children's book now, I do want to learn more about the picture aspect to it. So if you're ready to tell me more, I'm impatiently waiting.
I am. And to all of our listeners out there, when we publish this, we will also include a link to all of these links, but also we will include our stories here that were written for you so you can see what they are, that we generated here. Cause I know if you're listening, on the podcast, we didn't read the entirety of these. And if you're watching, we didn't read the entirety of these. So we will include these AI generated prompts, stories. We'll include the prompt and the story so you can see what it did. So that's pretty neat. Okay. So that is ChatGPT. And again, it's already incorporated in one of your favorite applications that you may be using in the classroom, and that's Canva. Canva came out with a brand new feature called Canva Docs. And in Canva Docs, they have a GPT-3 system built in to help you get a head start on your writing in those docs. And at the end, I'll show you how Canva has incorporated ChatGPT and the DALL-E system that we're going to be showing next. So here's the DALL-E system. It's by the same company, Kyle, OpenAI. And it uses the same idea about using a text prompt to generate something from the AI, but this one generates an image. Now, I'm going to do my best to explain how this technology works, but a lot of it is over my head. So what this system does is it takes your text prompt and turns each word into a token, okay? And it throws that token into the neural network and says, okay, what images hit or what parts of images hit these tokens? And then it starts to throw things together, which is called this diffusion model. It starts to generate this diffused image. And basically there's this other AI that says, nope, that's not it. Nope, that doesn't work. Nope, nope. And it slowly adjusts until that AI starts going, yeah, that's starting to look right. Yeah, that's starting to look right. Yeah, that's starting to look right. Until it presents an image that fits those tokens. It's crazy, but it does this in a matter of seconds. So Kyle, I want you to give me like, and I want you to give me like a Mad Libs for an image, right? So just an absurd thing of things that don't go together, just something weird.
How about an overweight hockey player playing polo on the back of a giraffe?
All right. So here we go.
Oh, yeah. Fix that error real quick. Yep.
On the back of a giraffe. Okay. Ready?
Okay.
So an overweight hockey player playing polo on the back of a giraffe. Generate. So here we go. So it's going in, and you can also ask it to do a photo realistic version of that. You can do it as an impressionist. Look, here you go. So, an overweight hockey player playing polo on the back of a giraffe, Kyle.
I love the fact that the giraffe is overweight too.
But do you notice the giraffe? The giraffe is on roller skates. No. So, but Kyle, I want you to think of this real quick. This didn't exist until your brain came up with it and you put it in. It now exists.
My mind right now. This is hilarious.
So, but now you go back to ChatGPT and say, write the adventures of an overweight hockey player on a giraffe, cross-continentally playing against the best player. Like, now you have pictures to your story and you did nothing. You just generated them, right?
So
these things are the hilarious factors in these auto-generated things. Now, here's something, right? Imagine that you have students that have, like, you ask them, like maybe you're an art teacher and you ask students to do something and they're like, I just don't know where to start. I don't know what to do. You do a prompt in here and now you're like, oh, I'm not going to do exactly that, but now I have an idea. Now I have some inspiration to go off and make something on my own. You're giving them a head start. You're giving them a little nudge, right? And sometimes our students need that little nudge, that little push. Or how about this? You have students do this in your class. Let's say you're an English teacher. I want you to come up with a crazy image, a crazy prompt for an image. Have the image pop up. Now write a story from yourself, not go to ChatGPT. Now write a story about this picture, right? So now you're having creative writing and the prompt is their thought, which is now taking image form, right? There's ways that can be used in the classroom. We can't be scared of it. It's not going away. That's what I'm trying to say, right? Just like the internet didn't go away. Oh, I don't want my students using the internet to look up information. They should be getting it from me. Well, why not? Why can't we let, we've grown accustomed to allowing our students to research on the internet, right? It takes time. And I always tell people at the onset of any new technology that that flies in the face of what pedagogical approach you may think is necessary, there's always resistance. and I point all the way back to Aristotle. Okay. Aristotle, a Greek philosopher, stated that the written word is going to destroy education because people will no longer need to truly learn anything. They just have to go back to text to reference it. And that is not truly learning. So Aristotle said the written word was going to destroy learning. And you know why we know he said that? Because his best student, Plato, wrote it down. Okay? So even back then, new technology scared the, I don't want to say the older, the elders, but it scares those who have been in the game for a while. And it's the early adopters, the innovators, the ground shakers, right? The disruptors that find a way to make what is initially thought of as something bad into something pretty cool, right?
So I've been trying to sign up for my account, but it's saying it needs a few minutes. So I wasn't able to test it out myself, but I humor me and do another one for me, cause I want to see what it comes up with here. So, and I just realized while you're getting over to it, that one of the images of the giraffe here also has a hockey stick in his mouth, which is absolutely yeah, right hilarious
here.
Too.
Yeah, it's right up here.
So, okay. So new one here.
Okay, new one. Here we go.
Yeah. So this one's going to be really obscure. Natalie Portman.
Now, here's the I don't, it does not allow this one because it's the free version.
Oh, okay. Right?
So there's like the one John Oliver used, I believe it was something diffusion. There's a couple different ones out there.
So this one doesn't do that.
Yeah, because okay. It's free, they don't want you to generate politicians, that kind of thing.
I still got it. I just will do a generic thing. So put down young woman fist fighting a pastrami sandwich and see what it comes up with.
All right, here we go. So a young woman fist fighting a pastrami sandwich. What location?
In Paris.
Here we go. So a young woman fist fighting a pastrami sandwich in Paris. So let's take a look. There you go. There you go. Now,
okay, so I don't see the actual fist fight, but.
Well, so but here's I guess she's like tussling with it, right?
Yeah, I guess so.
Well, how about this? A young woman fist fighting a man dressed
as a pastrami sandwich?
As a pastrami sandwich in Paris. So let's see. Let's see now. So a young woman fist fighting a man dressed as a pastrami sandwich in Paris. Because I think you were imagining like the pastrami. There we go.
Look, oh, there we go.
So,
one of them looks more like a hot dog, but that's still funny.
It does. But I want you to understand this as well. None of these people are real.
Right.
They're not grabbing like from like istockphotos.com and then just inserting them and overlaying. None of these people are real. They are taking features from multiple sources and diffusing pixels to generate what the other half of the AI deems as a good representation of what your tokenized text is asking for. Right. It's pretty nuts, right? And I want you to kind of think of this. If you're a Star Trek fan out there, think about the food generators, the replicators they have on board, right? On board the ship. They're using atoms, using your vocal text prompt, using atoms to put together what the computer deems as food, right? That's what it's doing here. It's using your text prompt to digitally pixelate an image that it thinks what will represent what you're asking for. It's brand new. Now, I'm going to do something for you, Kyle, real quick. Okay.
Now, while you're doing that, there was a question that came up in the chat. Are these apps that you download? So these are all available through openai.com. So
yeah,
it's going to be ChatGTP is the text writing program. And then this one here is the Can you remind me again what this one's called? Dolly, D-A-L-L-E is what this one is, but it's all available through the openai.com.
And to be absolutely clear, these are not specifically education tools. These are open to the public for business, personal, private. The industry is going to change based off of these. So it's not a education-based tool. So because of that, Kyle, OpenAI has not signed COPPA, FERPA, the Student Privacy Pledge, a Human Privacy Pledge, none of that. Okay, so that's not part of this. And it does state when you're signing up, you have to be 18 or older to sign up, but there's no age verification or anything off of it, right? And so right off the bat, you know, you can say, well, I can't use this in my school because students are not of age. Understood, 100% understood. But teachers can't, right? I'm just like we're doing here, Kyle, where you're giving me text prompts and I'm showing it to you. Imagine if kids were doing that in class based on some of the vocabulary terms you were having them learn or based upon some of the historical context. Watch this. Make me an oil painting of George Washington and Abraham Lincoln sharing a birthday cake. Okay. It's an make me an oil painting of George Washington and Abraham Lincoln sharing a birthday cake. So here we go. Let's see.
The anticipation's killing me.
There you go.
Oh, yes. Right?
I asked for an oil painting. And now I don't really see Abraham Lincoln really much in here.
Abraham Lincoln's with a white beard and white hair is a little bit off, but
yeah. So, but it brings these things up. And again, it's brand new. It's not searching the internet for something similar. It is generating it brand new, never before existed off of this. And here's another cool thing. Which of these do you like best, Kyle?
You know, even though it's the most inaccurate of them, the hair colors should be opposite. I like the one on the far right, where they got like the.
So this one?
Yes, that one right there.
So watch this. You're like, I like this, but it's not quite what I want. Generate more variations of this type, right? So now you can start honing in on what you really want, right? So I like that one, but now I want to hone in and generate something a little bit more like that. Now look, now it generated something similar to this one, but also four brand new ones. And you can keep honing in on that to find something that you like.
Those are more inaccurate if you ask me. The one looks more like John Adams.
but this one, it's not now referring back to the text prompt. It's now referring back to the image.
Okay.
Right? So you can also do the same thing with images. So I'm going to surprise you, Kyle, really quick. I have your picture here.
Oh, boy.
Right? So there's Kyle right there. Whoop, wrong thing. Hold on. I hate when I do that. Here we go. Crop. Generate variation. So now it's going to create variations of you based upon your facial features and everything else. So here we go. Let's see what this AI generates for Kyle Anderson. There you go.
Oh, look, it's me with the red beard again. All right. But, you know, it's like me from like 15 years ago.
So these are not you, but they're not real people. It generated something similar to you, but not you.
Oh, that's funny.
Right? But here's the thing. Imagine if you took this to get a new ID, or you took this and printed it out as your passport photo.
Just thinking that because I have to renew my passport.
People aren't going to say that's not you because it looks similar-ish, but it's not you, right? So there's implications here with this kinds of stuff. I did the same thing with myself, and it turned me into somebody that looked like my friend Curtis. And so I sent it to my buddy Curtis. I'm like, hey, the AI thinks I look like you. And he's like, that's not me, because it looks just like him.
That's funny.
Right. So it's hilarious of what this can do, but, and the implications of it. But here's the thing. We've generated text based on a prompt. We've generated images based on a prompt. Did you know that they are currently working on generating accurate voice emulations based on a prompt?
Oh, see, now that's just...
So Microsoft is funding this. Microsoft has paid $1 billion early on to OpenAI for all of their stuff. Okay. And they're putting more money in. And so they are working on a project, and it says, you may not know, but Microsoft owns GitHub. And it says right there in little small letters, Microsoft, they're doing this. And so this is what they're doing, Kyle. They have, they've gone into the open audiobook library. There's an audiobook library that's free and it's open. They have taken all the audio from all of these authors in these audiobooks, and they have determined, you know, where you're from and inflections and the difference between anger and happiness and sorrow. And they've created a model that will go through all of that stuff. It'll ask you, the speaker, to just read a prompt for 3 seconds. And after reading the prompt, it will go through the same model of what it did in DALL-E and chat, but try to emulate your voice for any text. And it's at the infancy, so it doesn't sound that great. For example, here is a prompt of a speaker. So that's an actual person reading this passage. It goes in, it looks through all the different voices and tones of everybody who's read that in that free audiobook library, and it created a computer-generated voice trying to emulate that one person.
Oh, so you must not have had the sound sharing on the screen, because we didn't hear anything on our end.
Oh, gotcha, gotcha. You know, it's probably because, let me check one thing. Yes, here we go. Hold on. Hold your horses, everybody.
Now I want the AI to put up an image of Joe Marquez holding his horses and see what that would come up with.
All right, so let's see if it does it now. Hold on. Nope, still not working. I don't know why it's not working. Oh, well. But anyways, the idea here is you have anybody can read a prompt as long as they have 3 seconds of your audio. It'll go through all the different voices and tones and find something that matches you, or mash voiceal structures together to most emulate you. And then it will try to create an automated voice based on text prompt in a natural language. It's the very beginning, but this can change things for, you know, sound bites. And imagine being a call-in person and say that you're a politician and you sound just like that politician because you're using one of these voice simulators. They're also working on video as well. So not just deepfakes, where you take an existing video and modulate the face, but they're working on something where you can completely generate a fake video. Completely generate it. Now, I'm sure that's years away from perfection, and it's probably going to take a lot of computing power, so it's probably not going to be cloud-based, but that's coming down, right? So what are these implications for society, for humanity? There's a lot. But it all starts with talking to our students about this. What is the ethical aspect of this? What are our responsibilities, and how can we use this responsibly? What are some bad ways, detrimental ways that this can be used so that you don't do it that way? It's now going to be something we need to teach in class, not just digital citizenship, but ethical digital citizenship on being able to create things like this. That's why I'm saying we are at the precipice. We're at the very forefront of this brand new wave of utilizing computing power to generate new things based upon whatever you want. And we have to be ready for it. We have to have students who are ready for it. And we have to teach this stuff in class. Kyle, what are your thoughts?
This got a lot of potential, but right now, yes, I think there's a lot of kinks that are going to need to be worked out of this before it becomes something that is truly beneficial. Like right now, I don't want to call it a novelty, because novelty implies that it's going to eventually disappear. This isn't going anywhere. But at the same time, right now, you're right. Like in the beginning, when the internet was first coming out, when you and I were in like junior high and high school, it was something that a lot of people talked about, like, oh, this is going to destroy learning and teaching and whatnot. And I can see where a lot of people are probably thinking that right now with this, but this definitely does have potential. So, and if anything, for right now, it's highly entertaining, because between the Chewbacca and Fozzie story, and then it's too bad that we couldn't use that program to create a Chewbacca and Fozzie together, because I'm assuming that one, because they're like famous, quote unquote, then it may not create it. But there's definitely other programs out there, I'm sure, because again, going back to the John Oliver episode, somebody, well, not just somebody, but lots of people were sending him images of just crazy things he was doing based on what they're saying, John Oliver eating a sandwich or stuff like that. So,
yeah, I mean, it is, you know, it is entertaining. And it, again, it could really start conversations in classroom. But another thing that I didn't even talk about with ChatGPT is it actually can be a helper. So there's instances where coders have a line of code that's not working. And they'll copy the code and paste it and say, why is this code not working? And Dolly will go through and say, it's because this line of code is messed up. Let me rewrite it for you. And it will rewrite the code for you. It'll identify the bug in the code. I have heard some coding teachers are asking it, I am looking for a code to be written in Python, and I want the code to be embedded in this and do this, and it will write the code for you, Kyle. It does all that. It does all that. There's so many things. But I wanted to show people, like, this is not far and away from our classroom, because Canva has these built into it, Kyle. If you're on, like, a presentation slide in Canva, and you come down to, and I'm going to remove our faces really quick just so you can see the waffle. You come down here to the waffle under apps. There's text to image right here. And I'm going to click use. That is the Dolly engine built into Canva. It does the same thing, but instead of having to go to that open source and be 18, now you can do it under Canva, who has signed the COPPA, FERPA, and Privacy Pledge. So the kids can use it in class if you have access to Canva, right? And so the same thing, make me an image of a wolf being frightened by the three little pigs, right? And you can, it says, how do you want the style to be? You can surprise you. You can say, I want it to be a photo. I want it to be a drawing. I want it to be 3D. Let's try that. 3D, generate image. So there it goes. It's doing the magic just like it did on Dolly, but it's in a different GUI. It's in a different graphical user interface. It looks a little bit more magical with all the little, you know, sparkly lights popping up right here. But it's the exact same engine that they have licensed from OpenAI to be able to incorporate it into their tools. Now, I will have to say that I tend to get better images off of the actual Dolly site than off of Canva. So I don't know if they've tweaked the code. I don't know if to make it COPPA FERPA compliant, they had to adjust the code. But you can notice it didn't quite do what I wanted it to do, right?
Yeah, it's not even including the wolf and the three little pigs in the same image. They're just, they're kind of individual.
Yeah. So, I mean, sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. Right. But I also wanted to show you Canva started a new thing called Canva Docs. And there's a thing off to the side that they have called the plus button. And so if I come all the way down to the bottom, there's the plus button. Magic Write is their ChatGPT. Magic Write. And it does the same things, right? Write me a starting paragraph, not stratting, a starting paragraph to an eighth grade paper on the structure of the atom. And so Canva will do the same thing that ChatGPT does. It doesn't show it to you writing like ChatGPT does, but it wrote me the opening paragraph to a paper I was probably asked to write, and then I can fill in the blanks, right? It's built into Canva. That is the GPT-3 code that they have licensed from OpenAI. And there's lots of different companies out there licensing it out for various reasons. I like it. There's so many possibilities, but there's also so many ways that it can be abused. And I think that's why we really have to talk about it to our students and to our teachers. Wouldn't it be amazing if this was kind of like the end of the road for teachers pay teachers, right? Now teachers don't have to pay teachers for a lesson plan. Now they will just jump on here and get it. I think teacher giving to teachers is fine and amazing. I don't like, having to pay. Not because I think in education we should be supporting each other. I guess to each their own, right? But again, a lot of this seems far away because it's its own independent beta. But then you see it actually embedded into an app that I use every day. It's kind of interesting. Right. What do you think, Kyle?
Yeah, for sure. No, the potential is definitely there. So, but because it's so new, again, there's a lot of different things that need to be worked out with it before I feel that this will be fully integrated into education.
Yeah. And you know, this is a great introduction to a lot of people. We've had a lot of live viewers today, which is fantastic because we didn't even really promote this, which is cool. But I do want you to know that it's no secret. I am director of academic innovation for Q, and this is an innovative tool that needs to be talked about. So we are actually doing a workshop this Thursday, and it's free for Q members. Q members can come to this for free, and it's a generative AI in the classroom discussion. We're going to go over the tools, kind of like we went here, but more hands-on, and allow the participants to play around with it and then have a discussion about how would you use this in the classroom? How would you use this in your profession? So if you want to sign up for this, you can see right here, if you go to qlearns.org/AIPD, you can sign up for it. And again, it is 100% free for Q members. And here is something funny about this, Kyle. The pitch right here, we invite you to join us for a demonstration of tools and discussion and implications of generative AI in the classroom. I asked ChatGPT to write that for me. I said, write me a fun pitch for a generative AI professional development session. It wrote that for me. I didn't write it.
Did you also create the imagery using Dolly?
I did. So the robots off to the side with papers being turned in, I asked Dolly to draw me an AI represented by a robot turning in papers that they wrote instead of humans in the classroom. And that's one of the images. And I removed the background just to make it a little bit cooler on this graphic, but that is an image created by Dolly. I didn't have to create anything. And I'm not abusing any copyright laws because I made that, but through my text, not through anything else. And if you notice at the very bottom, I do cite that. The image was generated by a text prompt from Joe Marquez using the Dolly tool. So do you think that's going to be a new thing now in books, where it doesn't say author, but it says idea generated through AI through a prompt by this individual? It's no longer going to say authored by, it's going to say prompted by.
Yeah. This really catches on, then these AI companies are going to start charging for it. So they get a little cut of everything. So
they will. They absolutely will. No doubt.
So, but just a reminder. Yeah. We'll definitely throw some links out in the show notes to this. Anything else we want to add before we wrap things up?
You know, I think that's it. I think it's a conversation that needs to continually being had. If this is the first time you've heard about this, take the 3-day weekend that you have right now and play around with it. It's fun. If you have young ones at your house, have them come up with some silly stories and then have ChatGTP write it and then read it with each other, because that's fun. My daughters and I do that all the time now. But also generate some ideas that you can be utilize this in the classroom, at least to get some juices flowing. But I'm excited about this. It's interesting. It's fun. And it's not, like you said, Kyle, it's not going away. And you're absolutely right. It is in its infancy, but this is going to grow up to be a big, bad, not bad as in not good, but bad as in cool. Like it's going to be a big, bad tool going forward for humanity, for better or for worse. So we got to take a look at it. And that's what we do here at the Sons of Technology. We identify what is disrupting education and bring it to you, even if it is 2 months late. So, Kyle, any parting words as we sign out for this episode?
I think we're good. It was nice getting back on the saddle again, because it has been quite a while since we kicked an episode. So, listeners, thank you for joining and supporting us. And Joe, thank you for sticking through this, because again, like, we easily could have just said, "Nah, we're not going to do another one." But great idea. I'm glad you brought this one to my attention.
Awesome. Well, thank you. And thanks for all the people out there that that are using this and sending information my way. And as always, if you want to shoot us any ideas for future episodes, you know, you can reach out to Kyle at Anderson EdTech. You can reach out to me at JoeMarquez70 when I check Twitter every month, just once. I check it once a month for any messages. And besides that, you know what? Keep on moving forward. Keep on innovating. Keep on being the teacher that you are. But most importantly, take some time off during this 3-day weekend, because we all know you deserve it. So everybody, have yourselves a wonderful day.